on your 3CR community radio station. And we've got Rosanna Barbera on the line. Go on,
good
go.
Good morning, Rosanna. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good to hear your voice. It's been a minute since I was up there.
Yeah, it's great to hear from you and great to be on Melbourne Radio.
Yeah, well, I mean, people might know that the Addie Road, which you are the CEO of, has our sister radio on it.
Yes, it does, Radio Skid Row, and they're fantastic and very important service, particularly because they broadcast in so many different languages, but also community radio is still very important to so many people.
Yeah, and congratulations always for championing such a hub of community activity. I was really floored when I went there last with Abe and Pilar, because it really is an everything for community in such a barren wasteland of anti-culture Australia.
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. And our shrinking spaces of democracy in a neoliberal culture, it's very important to safeguard places like community centres, like Addison Road Community Centre, where people can still come together from all different walks of life and, you know, talk about maybe another Australia is possible.
Well, I was just thinking about that even just before we called you, how this place where Addie Road is now used to be a military barracks, and how these military structures and even a military mindset can be repurposed for community good, and actually the whole community benefits from it. You guys run a whole range of services that you showed us last, like community pantries, therapy, community therapy, art spaces, music concerts, dental checks. You do it all, really, and from really not nearly as much funding as any government agency gets. You'd manage to do more with it.
Yeah, we do it on very, very little funding. In fact, we don't get any government funding that's reoccurring. We do get grants every now and again, but it's really community doing it with community and for community. And I think we see that more and more, that the community come together because, you know, because of the gaps that exist, and also because, you know, we really need to find alternatives and not always rely on government, because if we really want to do programs that are relevant to the community and important to the community and have these spaces, sometimes, you know, government funding is not the way forward, but finding sustainable models at a grassroots level so that people really do have an independent say into how things are run.
You've got a very strong board, don't you?
I've got a really good board of directors, yeah, absolutely. Very committed people with incredible backgrounds, lots of experience, and very supportive of community-led and community-based programs.
You have a very interesting background yourself. One, you come from a family that have come to Australia, so your English wasn't your first language, was it?
Yeah, my parents migrated. My parents migrated to Australia. After World War II, they came to Australia from Italy, so a war-torn country. And, you know, they met here, married here, and my brother and I were both born in Australia. So we come from very strong migrant working class western suburbs of Sydney.
Yeah, and then you went out and you did some pretty amazing things in other countries, didn't you?
Yeah, very early on, I was raised with a very strong sense of solidarity and a very strong sense of, you know, justice. And so that it was just natural for me to, to be connected to communities that, you know, had fled oppression. and war and conflict. And so that led me to Cambodia, actually. So building relations with Cambodian communities and eventually moving to Cambodia, but getting involved in a lot of, you know, regional and global struggles of solidarity and equality and human rights.
But also coming up with methodologies that can actually work against the odds.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe to be more explicit about what you just said, one of the things that I was involved with was to build a sex worker union. And the sex worker union, you know, it was really led by sex workers, and it exists now, as you know, today. And it's a big union of more than 6,000 members. And it existed in a place where there was never even the idea that sex workers could even, you know, stand up and say that they're sex workers or come out of the shadows or come out of hiding, because they're highly stigmatized. A, they're sex workers. A, they were women and young, and in a patriarchal society, it's not easy to come out and fight for your rights. But eventually they did, and, you know, they're a very strong union, and they've been able to really work even against pharmaceutical companies that wanted to experiment on them. Oh. They fought against the United States government and won some really major battles. And I think that's a real achievement of what it means to mobilise and organise grassroots people. And when they're united against, you know, struggles that seem insurmountable, but together they can actually win battles.
And coming from that, like, and coming back to Australia when you did, and how did you find, I guess, the conditions, and how do you find the conditions, and what needs to be done in order to achieve even the smallest victory in that sense of building community to fight against all odds here?
Yeah, I find it's much harder here in Australia. I find that in Australia, I mean, well, first of all, when I came to Australia 12 years ago, I was really shocked to discover that food security was an issue. Never in a million years did I think I would return to a very rich country that is a donor of, you know, an aid donor to the Global South and a contributor to the United Nations programs on poverty reduction, that I would return to Australia and see food insecurity. And again, I thought, well, maybe the what's going on here, it's not just that you've got to look at food insecurity and feed people and that's the answer, but the questions that we were asking is, why is it like this? And what we discovered was this incredible inequality that we're seeing in Australia. But what's even more frightening is that inequality is rising. And so it's becoming harder and harder. So in the last 12 years that I've been here, the conditions of the average person, and it's hit the lower middle class as well in this country, is that the situation's getting worse. And I see less organising and understanding the causes of this, and I see more and more people just struggling to survive, or those that are falling through the cracks because they can no longer survive in this system. And, yeah, the biggest question is, you know, what's the causes of it, which the answer is quite easy, and what do we do about it, and how do we mobilise and organise ourselves and put aside the differences that we have and put aside, you know, the things that really divide us, you know. And one of those things that really divide us is this very misunderstanding of identities, you know, identity politics in the way that it can be played out can be something that really divides us and stops us coming together.
It's the issue of the belief, or a lot of work that's gone into creating this myth that Australia is the lucky country. We'll put it in a sort of the Prayseed form. That's spent a long time for white Australian politic to create this belief that in actual fact they've conferred upon the population of Australia a generous world view, and that everywhere else is much worse than here. That it's undermining people's sense of a learned helplessness, isn't it? A certain belief that other people are going to save your bacon, as it were.
Oh, absolutely. And how powerful and how effective that myth is, because it works. You know, people continuously say, oh, well, you know, things are getting harder, but at least we're better off being here.
Well, better than being in Gaza.
Well, absolutely better than being Gaza. But, you know, I don't... That's such a... You know, we shouldn't accept mediocre. We shouldn't accept... We shouldn't accept something that's not good for the general people because it's better than somewhere else.
Yeah, that's right.
I think when you say we're the lucky country, yeah, we're absolutely lucky for the 3 to 5% of the people that own Australia, the 3 to 5% of the people that appropriate the resources of the majority into their own control and benefit. Yeah, we're certainly lucky for a few, but unfortunately that luck is not extended to the majority of the population.
Well, it's great that Addy Road is actually in the process of creating a political and social revolution, really.
Well, I that's a very optimistic statement. I do hope that in my lifetime that I do see that alternatives do come out of spaces and places like Addy Road, because I think it's important that people do come together and have these spaces and these platforms where they can where they can start having conversations and discussions about, you know, is another Australia possible, and what does that look like, and how can it be built with principles of equality and building institutions of public good and public interest, and, you know, workers' rights and equality for men and women, and strong, good safety nets for people that are doing it tough.
And you guys have a poetry festival, yeah, coming up in May.
Yeah, we've got a writers' festival. We have one every year. This will be our fifth one coming up.
And we'll be coming up for it.
Yes, that'll be fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Our Addy Road Festival coordinator and director, Mark Mordew. He himself is a well-known Australian author, and he always seems to have a magical cast of hundreds, wonderful writers, very established writers and poets, but also up-and-coming writers and poets. So it's always very interesting.
That's awesome. And for anyone that's looking to find out more, where can they get it?
If you go to www.addyroad.org, then there will be a .org.au. There will be a program, at least save the date. And as more and more writers sign up, there will be more and more advertisements announcing the different panels.
Well, that just goes to show it's a classic case of bread and roses, right?
It definitely is bread and roses, and we do need bread, absolutely, but without roses there will be no progress in our lives.
Thanks very much for talking to us this morning, Rosanna.
It was lovely. Thank you very much.